91.3 KXCI Tucson. Real people, real radio. Hello, Tucson. Welcome to 91.3 KXCI Tucson, where you will find real people, real radio. This is Kathy Harris with my co-host, Aspen Green, and we're bringing you Broad Perspectives Radio, a program by women, about women, but for everyone. You can hear more of our programs on our podcast page at kxci.org. Well, today we have a real treat for you. Chris O'Dell is here to talk about her book and the new documentary coming out next week about her life working with the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, and many other popular artists in the 70s. This lady has some great stories to share. So, Aspen, please introduce Chris to us.
I sure will. Chris O'Dell left Tucson in 1967 to begin her life in Los Angeles. Through synchronicity and perhaps fate, she met people who propelled her life into the highest echelon of rock and roll. She worked with the Beatles in London in the late 60s at their company, Apple. After a stint as a personal assistant to the Rolling Stones in LA, she became the first female tour manager, working with many of the most popular artists of the 70s. After 20 years in the music business, she became a certified hypnotherapist and from there earned her master's degree as a licensed professional counselor in Tucson. For the next 20 years, she worked with drug addiction and psychiatric disorders, retiring in 2012. Chris is now settled back in Tucson. We're so lucky to have you back, Chris. Welcome to our show.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad to be able to do this. I've heard so much about your show.
Well, thank you so much. And we've heard so much about you. I'm so lucky that I got to meet you and we're friends now. You grew up in Tucson, right?
I was born in Indiana. Oh. My mom and dad then went to Oklahoma. So I was about 10 or 11 when we moved here. But to me, this is home.
Start with your move to LA. And why did you move there from Tucson?
It's so interesting. I mean, Tucson was pretty dull back in 1967. You could cruise up Speedway, but that was about it. But there were a couple clubs we went to, and one of them, a band from LA, was playing called the Plymouth Rockers. And they said, why don't you come to LA? So I kind of went, shall I go to the U of A to drama, be in the drama school, or shall I go to LA? And I thought, I think I'll go to LA. I don't really like being in the front of the stage. It was just so amazing there after living here. And everything that happened just happened literally synchronistically.
So a girl from Tucson goes to England to be with the Beatles at the most crucial time of their recordings. How does that happen?
I went to LA and I did some menial jobs. I think I went in 66, so it didn't take long. By 68, I'd met a man named Derek Taylor, and he had been the Beatles press agent and was going back to work at Apple. I drove him around because he didn't drive. And we became really, really good friends. And at some point, he just said, I think you should come to London. And I thought, ha ha. I don't think so. That was a big deal to fly across the ocean at that time. But I was living with an actress named Terry Garr.
Oh.
And Terry makes me so sad she's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Terry, she had been to London. And when Derek called one night, he was in New York with John and Paul. And he said, are you going to come? And I told Terry and she went, you've got to go. I've been there. It's wonderful. So I sold my record collection. I sold my car. I sold everything. My dad sold my life insurance policy to get a ticket to London. So that's how I ended up there. Derek Taylor was a major part of that time of my life.
So you were in the studio when the Beatles recorded the White Album and Abbey Road and Let It Be. And you even got to sing on the final cut of Hey Jude. I mean, wow. How did you keep your feet on the ground?
You know, that's a really good question. I think it was the granny boots. You guys remember, don't know if you would remember granny boots, but they were granny takes a trip was real important in London then. No, honestly, I think every day was just so amazing that I got used to amazing. Just like it became just the regular routine. Oh, look who's here today. Lauren Bacall's just showed up. So it was just every day was something.
So did you end up having an individual relationship with the Beatles, or were you just an employee there?
I was working for Peter Asher. He is the one who finally hired me. And we weren't that big. At one point, we were on Wigmore Street on one floor. And so then we moved to Savile Row and we were on four floors, but it was small enough that when a Beatle came, everybody knew it, the word spread, and they walked very freely. Paul was working there basically, and then John and Yoko were working there. They just were part of the crowd.
So, what were some of the most memorable moments that you can share with us from your time with the Beatles? And if you can go back and relive that moment, what would that be?
God, there's so many singing on Hey Jude, being on the rooftop. Those were important.
Talk to us about that being on the rooftop, that famous concert.
I wasn't supposed to be there because no employees were allowed because they were afraid the roof was going to fall in. So the cameraman, who I knew by that time because they'd been filming for ages down in the studio, he came by my room and said, "Come up, I need an assistant." So I went up, sat down by the chimney, and then Ken Mansfield came and sat down, who worked for Capitol Records, and then Maureen Starkey, who is Ringo's wife, and then Yoko. And we were the audience, literally, until people start coming out of the roof. The word I always use is cold. It was so cold. It wasn't the first time I ever saw them play together. I'd been in the studio. But it was the first time that it was like that. And I was really looking out over the roof because I went to see people on the street hearing the Beatles. That was really exciting for me.
Did you
But
realize at the time how famous that would become?
no idea.
Wow.
No idea. They said it was the last time they played together. They went right down to the studio and played more. So it didn't feel like a last concert.
Got it.
And yeah, it still amazes me.
So, what was the biggest challenge of being a woman in a male-dominated rock industry at that time?
It was more noticeable after I started becoming a tour manager because then I was literally thrown in with a lot of men. I think I had to fight for wages. That was one thing. I don't even know what the wage was back then, but I had to fight to get raises. It was kind of taken for granted. Most of the time, I got treated just like everybody else there. I didn't feel it. Occasionally, I ran into a roadie or someone who didn't like taking orders from a woman, one in
Right.
particular.
What was
And
the first band that you worked for as a tour manager?
that would be Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. Well, I went out with the Rolling Stones, but I was their assistant.
Oh,
So
okay.
that
Yeah,
was a little.
you've seen some of the most famous moments in rock history with the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, Bob Dylan, Led Zeppelin, Eric Clapton, Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, Leon Russell, and Queen. And I know I haven't named them all.
No, there we made a list the other day for the band who's going to be playing at the premiere. I wrote down 21 groups I worked with in America, and in I also lived in Germany and worked with groups, American groups and English groups there.
Yeah, and you've had songs written about you. Now, I had a local musician write a song about me, and I thought that was pretty special. He put it on a CD that probably nobody ever saw or bought. But you've had some famous songs written about you. Can you talk about those?
Well, first of all, Leon Russell wrote a song called Pisces Apple Lady that was about we weren't together. He wanted to be. And he just said, "I hope one day you would hear how much I cared for you." But we ended up getting together. Then he wrote a song called Hummingbird when I was living with him in LA. And then later, I was supposed to go to meet George Harrison. He was in Malibu doing some work at Capitol. And he would call me, but I didn't go right away. So he wrote a song, Miss Odell. Why don't you call me Miss Odell? It was funny because I was thinking about this morning, and it's like, if I had gone, I wouldn't have gotten that song.
Oh, that's funny. Even after I met you, I didn't realize about that song was written about you. That's great. Substance abuse is a constant theme throughout your book, Miss Odell. And it's the 70s. I mean, I lived through them. I know what it was like. I know what me and my friends were doing. And it affected everybody in his personal lives that you worked with, especially, I would assume, from what I read with the Rolling Stones. They were pretty big party people. How did you survive all that?
With the Stones, I had to take a little time off. I mean, I was okay, but the thing about people like the bands back then, when everybody was doing drugs, is everybody was giving them drugs because they were the Rolling Stones. So there was always a lot of drugs, cocaine, heroin. I chose cocaine. And when I came back, I literally had to stop everything. I didn't know that there were organizations that could help me way back then, because that was 73, 72. And I did quit for about a year until I went out with CSNY. And then I started drinking again. But that was difficult. I just think that at that time in the 70s, that's part of what we did.
It is true. I wasn't on tour with famous rock bands, but that is what we did. So, what inspired you to write your book, Miss Odell? What did you want your audience to know about you?
It's so simple. It's like I figured I lived all of these amazing things and during these amazing times. I knew there were many people who would have liked to have been me during that time. And I thought, I'm going to share what it was like. You know,
Okay.
I'm sharing my story. So those who weren't there, which was a lot more, I was the only one. That was why I wrote it.
Everybody that you're writing about, everybody knows about it. It's not some small band that we wouldn't have heard of. It's all these famous bands that we've all idolized and probably still play the music of today. It's incredible who you work with.
You know, Aspen, I'm just finally now getting the realization in my own head of I was the only woman doing that. Oftentimes, the only woman on tour. And I did bring together a lot of people. I had never really completely allowed myself to take that credit. You know,
Right. You
yeah.
do see more females now because I work with them, and I think that they finally got it that females are great organizers and caregivers and take care of things well. So you might have started that movement.
Well, you know, I was going to do a book about women who are doing it now, and they can't talk, you know, where you're not allowed to talk. I can't remember the word for it now because we didn't have it, but they sign and say they can't talk about anything.
Oh, okay. So you kind of got grandfathered in with being allowed to talk about all of these things. We're going to take a music break. And when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the book and then also talk about the documentary that you have coming out that will be at the Loft starting on April 11th. But Kathy, how about a song for now?
Well, it's a perfect time for a song, but I have to start out by saying, oh my God, I can't believe you are on that roof with the Beatles for their last concert. That's incredible.
Who's jealous of that?
Yeah, really. And you know, that's why I love having this women's program, because we do have women pioneers, which you were, and we've had some of the first female rockers on the show. And it's so nice to know that we have come a ways. We have a ways to go, but we have come quite a ways.
True,
Okay,
true.
so the song you have chosen is Coyote by Joni Mitchell. Would you like to tell us why you chose this song?
Well, she's a female. She writes about on the Rolling Thunder Review. She came on to that, the Bob Dylan tour. And we had a little love triangle with Sam Shepard. She and I ended up friends. That's the good news. We ended up really good friends at that point. But she wrote about it. I'm the woman down the hall.
Oh, okay. That's good to know. Joni Mitchell has been dubbed by Rolling Stone magazine as one of the greatest songwriters ever, of course. The song Coyote was originally featured on the album Hejira in 1976. It was reportedly written on the tour bus while Joni traveled with Bob Dylan's Rolling Thunder Review. And some of the other artists there were Joan Baez, Ramblin' Jack Elliott, Sam Shepard, Allen Ginsberg, Gordon Lightfoot, and others. What an amazing tour that was. Oh my gosh. She said, everything was creating an aversion, but for me, on coke, I found him very attractive. What a typical statement to be making in the 70s, as you said. Okay, so let's listen to Coyote, written and sung by Joni Mitchell from her album, Hejira. 91.3 KXCI Tucson. What an amazing song. And we're returning to our interview with Chris O'Dell.
Yeah, I love Joni Mitchell, and you've been hearing a lot more of her lately as she's coming back and singing with Brandi Carlile and other folks. It's wonderful.
Yeah,
so
thank
in
you.
your book, you don't always paint a rosy picture of fame. What was your life like on tour with these major rock bands? Was this a happy time for you?
It was, but it was also really hard work. I now understand why I got into cocaine because I would get up in the morning early after a show, drink coffee, make phone calls to the next hotel or whatever was going on. I had to do it all and then get everybody ready to move to the next city. So it was hard work. My resting time was in backstage during the concert. I would only go watch one or two songs that I absolutely loved. And the rest of the time I sat backstage and drank. But it was hard work.
How has your perspective over the years changed since writing the book? And if you can go back and give Chris O'Dell advice, what would it be?
You know, this is such an interesting question, and I have pondered it because I'd like to think I could give her advice. But the truth is, if I said something that changed anything, I mean, it would change something and it wouldn't be the way it was. So even though it was the hard times and the good times and the fabulous times and the awful times, it was all an important part. So I don't know that I would say anything. You know, the obvious things like don't do drugs, that would have not worked.
You know, you paint an intimate picture of rock legends. How did you decide what stories to include and what to leave out?
There were so many. I think we had almost over 600 pages. And I think Kathy, who I worked with, who helped me write the book, she found a thread and she had to stick to it. And there wasn't a lot of room to do 600. Now I can't find the pages, the transcripts that we had from that we wrote up at that time, which is sad because I'd do another book.
So do you want to talk about who maybe was your most intimate relationship, the most maybe important relationship with a rock star that you've had?
It was George. I was living with Patty and George at Friar Park. She became my best friend and to this day is still a very dear friend. I learned so much from him. Oh my gosh, it was like he was my spiritual mentor for a long time. And he hated fame. So he was like somebody who wasn't walking around trying to go, it's me. He didn't do that. I really appreciate that.
Let's talk a little bit about the documentary that's coming out. What inspired you to create this documentary? And is it different than your book? And what story are you hoping to convey to the audiences with your documentary?
The distributor and producer of the documentary approached me at a Beatle Fest and said, I'd like to make a documentary about you. And I'm like, why? Literally.
Because you were there.
That's what he thought. So like, I just kind of went along with it. And then we filmed in London and Simon, the director, was just amazing. He's such a good friend now. So it was a really interesting experience because I got to help with the editing. I learned a little bit about documentary making. I would never have ever thought about doing it myself. I don't know that I had a message that I wanted to convey particularly. I think we just kind of went along with the flow. So I think it's kind of like my book. I was there. I'd like to share it with you. So that's what the documentary is. It's sharing and remembering with other people what that was like.
Were there any challenges in obtaining footage or doing any of the interviews with the documentary?
They like to have total control, everything that was Beatles now. It usually costs quite a lot of money. Or one, I wanted to use Miss O'Dell. But in the long run, and I think it would have been okay, and Olivia Harrison would have said yes, but it could have taken months to get her okay. There were many things. There are other bands that had to do different songs of the different groups.
Do you miss being on tour? If you had the opportunity and somebody called you up and said, I'm going on tour, could you come along, Chris? What would be your answer?
No. Actually, Linda Ronstadt did that to me in 2004. She said, "I want you to come on tour with me," because Janet couldn't, her assistant couldn't come. And I'm like, "No, I'm getting my master's degree. I'm overqualified now." And then she just kept going and she said, "Please come." So I did. Now nobody does drugs. Everything's quiet. People go to bed early. I mean, it couldn't have been more relaxed, but it still wore me out. And so I thought, that's it, never again.
So, Chris, Miss Odell, are you working on any other projects?
Thank you for asking. Actually, I'm in the process of working with an international team on a book and a documentary about interviews that I did with 11 rock star wives about what it was like being a woman behind these famous men, including Linda McCartney and Shirley Watts, Maureen Starkey. It was a pretty good combination of women.
I look forward to that, and we'll have to have you back on our show when that comes out.
Thank you.
What is your life like back in Tucson now?
Well, it was pretty quiet until this documentary stuff co started coming out. And now it seems like every day I'm doing an interview or something now that, and then it starts streaming May 13th. Up until then, it's been very quiet.
What's going on with the documentary at the Loft?
The April 11th, the premiere of it is a full night of a lot of fun. Jim Travis put together a band from local bands here that are going to play some of the songs of bands I work for. We're going to have two people in the lobby who are singing Beatles songs when people get there. So you arrive to a lot of music for a kickoff. And then we do the film and then Q&A after that. I've got books and I'm selling and signing books. The matinee on Sunday, the next Sunday, which would be the 13th, I'm going to be there to introduce the film and to do a Q&A and have books there. The other nights, they're just going to be regular nights.
Well, I just want to tell everybody, you have a lot of stories in your book, a lot of stories of who you were hanging out with and just personal stories of being with these very famous people. And I suggest if people are interested to get your book either before or at the Loft Theater, because just the stories are just dream come trues if any of us could live your life, that's for sure.
Thank you, honey. Thank you.
I look forward to it. I have my tickets. And thank you so much for being on our show today. You know, we could do a show with you, and that would last 2 hours, and we still wouldn't get to it all.
Oh, let's do this every week. I like that.
I think we would like that too. That would be a lot of fun. But unfortunately for today, that is all the time we have. But you can see and learn more about Chris Odell when the documentary about her life opens at the Loft on April the 11th. Chris, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us today. It's been so interesting. And thanks to all of you out there for being with us today. This is Kathy Harris with Aspen Green. You're listening to Broad Perspectives Radio at 91.3 KXCI Tucson. And for now, don't touch that dial because next up we have Boom Goddess Radio with Jennifer Davis Page. Have a nice Sunday and we'll see you next week.